Hi mums, happy International Women's Day. What a blessing it is to live in a time such as this. Women are doing so many great things and this week's guest is no exception. In fact, she has been a trailblazer in her field for many years. But before we get into that, welcome to the Confident Mum podcast. I'm your host, Olga Uju. If you are tuning in for the first time, then thank you. I hope you enjoy today's episode. And if you are a returning listener, then welcome back. Okay, so on this episode, we're joined by a fabulous woman, mum, and absolute boss, QB Springer. You will need a pen and paper because she drops some real gems about all things personal branding. Now, mums, in case you're thinking branding is something that relates to big corporations or celebrities, and you're absolutely right, it does. And I was thinking, how will she be able to relate this back to the everyday mum like you and me? But being the expert that she is, she breaks it down and all the way down, and she does it so effortlessly. In this episode, we also discuss the science of branding, I Am My Brand, which is also the title of one of her amazing books, Rubbing Shoulders with Celebrities, the significance of non-negotiable me time, how you can rise from a crisis and how it can help to build your brand, turning your pain into purpose, and so much more. It was a real pleasure to be joined by QB. Her energy is amazing. She's really pro women succeeding. Her journey was and continues to be very inspiring. So enjoy the episode and I will see you on the next one. Hello, mums. Welcome back to the Confident Mum podcast with your host, Olga Uju. So glad you're joining me again today. On today's episode, we are talking about personal branding and motherhood. You know, how can we reinvent ourselves after babies and what really is personal branding? So I'm joined by the amazing QB Springer. She is an award-winning international brand consultant and trainer with 24 years experience in brand marketing. So I'm going to pick her brain. We'll be looking at her book that she's currently got out, her new book that's coming up, and all the tips and tricks she can give us about how can we reinvent ourselves after babies. So without further ado, QB, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So before we dive in, actually, you've got a very interesting, colourful career and loads of experience in branding. But just tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Awesome. Well, as your intro says, I've been doing this for 24 years. It's actually 25 come this October, believe it or not. Yeah, I know. So some days I feel really old, and other days I just feel wise. I think today it's old, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, bless you.
It has flown by. I started my career before Google and Snapchat and podcasts and all the rest of it, right? I started marketing in a time where we had the yellow pages, for everybody who remembers. So I started in 1996, which is crazy. But I started, my first 10 years was very entertainment and fashion heavy. I started with MTV, as an intern with Trevor Nelson. Do you remember Trevor Nelson?
I do.
Yeah, so I started off.
I'm not that young myself, so yeah. I remember Trevor Nelson.
Awesome. So I started off with his MTV lip parties in the PR department as an intern whilst at university. And then when I finished uni, I got another internship, but in New York City. And my career really started off from that point. Yeah, and that was working for the very infamous Puff Daddy.
Oh, that must have been amazing. Yes,
yeah. Sean Diddy Combs. It was absolutely amazing. I have said in many an interview, including in the Sunday Times, where they did a whole piece about what I learned from Diddy. He really was the foundation to my career, because here was a man who, you know, was building a personal brand before it became a buzzword, and he was doing it well. And so I worked with Diddy for 3 years.
Did you get to kind of rub shoulders or shimmy with him? He's quite a dancer, isn't he, on his social media? He likes a bit of a two-step here and there.
He does. I mean, back then, he wasn't, you know, the media mogul that we know him to be now, right? It was a small office in Manhattan, Midtown. And, yeah, it was a very small team. Jamal Spencer, which is a very well-sought-after, very experienced, famous marketeer. He was my direct boss, but Diddy was in the office. And it was a small office. And oftentimes I say to people, who want to build empires. I say I have experienced firsthand that it doesn't get built in a day, because when I was with him, he was at the infancy of it. Mm-hmm. So then after working with Diddy, I worked with him for 3 years. I then got the opportunity to work with Justin Timberlake, which was amazing. And then after Justin, I worked with him on a Justified tour. Then I worked with Mariah Carey on her album launch. And all of this is within the capacity of brand marketing. Yeah. And then I got headhunted by Nike to work on something called Nike Midnight Madness, where they were combining music and sport, which was phenomenal. And then by the time I was 26, so all of this was before I was 26.
Oh, this happened in your hey. That's so cool. Yeah.
Right? So then by the time I was 26, I was headhunted to work for the MOBO Awards as head of marketing for MOBOs.
Amazing. So for those that don't understand really what personal branded marketing is all about, like just what exactly was your role?
So each of those campaigns, my role would differ. So as head of marketing for the MOBOs, it was managing quite a robust marketing team, everything from print advertising to the actual branding on the awards. So whenever you see an award ceremony, you see all the branding on the red carpet, you see the branding on the podium, etc. Managing all of that, making sure that looks the way it's meant to. Going out and securing the sponsorship deals. So I did £1.2 million worth of sponsorship for the MOBO Awards. But also on the personal branding side, the celebrities who would be awarded. So if we take Beyonce as an example, at the time she had just finished with Destiny's Child, she had her album out and she'd been awarded for her first album. There's a real big responsibility to make sure you're dealing with their camp, their record company, and whoever's sponsoring that category. And what happened with me is Beyonce was, excuse me, being awarded for a category that L'Oreal was sponsoring. And I ended up doing the deal that brought L'Oreal and Beyonce's camp together for the now infamous Because You're Worth It campaign. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when you're dealing with personal celebrity brands, it's looking at the commercial opportunities that are available. So as an example, towards the end of my tenure with MOBO, I got a freelance contract with Rio Ferdinand. For everybody who doesn't know who Rio is, he's a soccer player. And or footballer, because we're in England. I do American so much, I'm like, soccer. Football. And at the time, he was like, you know, starting lineup for Manchester United, and he was about to be captain for the England game that year. And with his brand, his commercial team contacted me and said, hey, we want Rio to be more than a footballer. We want him to get some commercial deals. And I ended up doing his first TV deal, which was with ITV. And he did a program called Rio's World Cup Windups. So that's an example of how you take a celebrity brand or any brand and you diversify their brand. So in his case, it was from soccer to then build him up. And now he is a fully fledged TV personality.
There you go. So that transition, that's amazing, actually, because we're going to stick on that. Just generally, you know, someone might be thinking, okay, cool, that sounds great because these are celebrities anyway. But how does the rebranding process even begin?
That's a really good question. So let's assume, I mean, I'll go back a little bit just for your viewers to say that all of that was the first 10 years of my career. I've now been doing this, like we mentioned, for 24 years. So I've evolved from entertainment into fashion, into luxe, into now doing speaking for corporate clients. And so
what I'm practicing what you preach, really.
Exactly. And so what I've learned along the way is that branding is a formula. It's more science than it is creativity. And so whatever I give you as an answer today really is the formula that applies for any industry. Whether you work in fashion or you work for Lloyds Banking Group, the formula is exactly the same. So now to answer your question, what one needs to do when you want to rebrand is you start with, and this is the same principle if you want to brand, you start with what's the vision.
Right.
So let's say, for example, you're doing a 9-to-5 and maybe you work as an accountant. And you love numbers, but you actually want to work still in numbers, but in the fashion industry. Start with what's the vision. Be very crystal clear on what that vision looks like. I describe it like this. If you imagine branding as a car, So I drive a Range Rover. So my brand, based on a car analogy, would be bold, would be quite sexy, but would be strong and stern and sturdy, right? Which actually my car is exactly like my brand. and a little bit luxurious, but practical, right? So thank you. So imagine a brand is like a car, and then your vision is where the business is trying to go. So in using the car analogy, that's your destination.
Okay.
Oftentimes what happens is people develop a brand, and you see this particularly with people who are good at social media. They've got great social media following and presence, but they don't have the destination, i.e. they don't know what the business goals are. And so therefore, they don't know where their brand is taking them.
Right.
Branding is literally just a vehicle to enable your business objectives to be achieved. And so without the vision, without the end destination, why are you building the brand? Why do you even have a car? Because where is it taking you to? And then some people, they know the destination, but they're not sure what sort of car they need to be sitting in. Is it a Range Rover like mine? Are you bold, a little bit luxurious, but practical? Is it a Nissan? Is it a Mercedes? Is it a Bentley? Like, what is the car that you need to be creating that's going to take you to the destination? And then the final part of the puzzle on the how, to answer your question, is all about strategy. And strategy can be seen like our sat-nav. If you know that you've got a car and you know what your destination is, i.e. your business objectives, now you need to know, how do I get there? And so if you don't understand the directions, we put it in the sat-nav, right? It gives us the coordinates, tells us when to go, when to turn, when to stop, when to pause, when to go round the roundabout, etc. That's your strategy. Your strategy is like the coordinates that you put in the sat-nav. And so when you put all these together, sometimes people have an amazing car, normally these vlogger kids, great brands, no destination, so they're broke because they have no business objectives. Mm-hmm. Or some people have a clear business objectives but no brand, so people don't buy from them. Or some people have the brand and they know where they're going, but they lack the strategy, i.e. the coordinates to put into the sat-nav.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, so we fall into three different categories. That is so interesting. So with regards to this formula and how you've applied it, you're saying it's a multifaceted formula where it can be applied to anything.
Absolutely.
So now there's a mum listening in saying, oh, hi, this is great. You know, I'm at home feeding my babies. You know, I used to work in a corporate, I guess. It's been a couple of years. My vision is to perhaps, you know, own my own business or to do my own thing, but I'm just a one-man band. How would I apply that formula?
So let's say this mum is saying, I want to own my own business. That's not a vision. That's just a desire. That's not a vision. That's just a desire. Okay. The desire is to own your own business. But the vision would look like, remember, your vision is about your business goals, which means we need to get really specific. I want to, in the next 3 years, have an annual revenue of 50,000. Or I want to have an annual revenue of 100,000 or 30,000, whatever that number is. You've got to be very crystal clear on the number. That is the first part of your business goals. Then you need the objectives. Well, how do we break down those goals? What does that look like as an objective? Maybe it's, okay, we're in 2021. By the end of 2021, if I could just do 10,000 as my annual revenue, that would be great. Then by 2022, maybe I want to double that and do 20,000, and then by 2023, I want to be doing 30,000, right? So having a clear vision that's around revenue, because business is about making money.
It is.
Otherwise, it's just a glorified hobby.
I find that, you know, a bit more reserved. Unlike Americans, there's lots of, you know, they talk more openly. I find anyway that money is a lot more spoken about. So this is really interesting.
There's a sad statistic that I saw, and it said 86% of women would rather talk about their death than money.
There you go.
Crazy. But yet, money is the tool that's going to enable you to send your children to school. It's the tool that's going to enable you to have the home that you desire for your family. It's the tool that's going to enable you to have a savings pot in your retirement so that you have the energy and the capacity to play with your grandchildren. Money's a tool that we need in order to have the lifestyle that we require, but yet we don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I say to women particularly, and I'm a mum, yeah. My daughter's 8, and I'll tell you a story. When my daughter, when I was 6 months pregnant with her, I was I'm going to use the word let go of the contract that I was in. And the TV show that I had was dropped. And I was in a horrible place where I had no money, a mortgage on a two-bedroom flat in London. And I just thought, what am I going to do? Nobody's going to hire me at 6 months pregnant. I got really clear on the vision.
Was this from what you had learned previously, or is it just, have you always been like this? Is it just all this vision that you've done for yourself? Is it easier to do it to other people? You know, you say you got really clear in your vision. Was that something that came naturally to you? Or?
So I think I'm, you know, I can't not state that I'm lucky because I come from a family of entrepreneurs. So my mom ran was a CEO for years for an organization. My older brother made his first million by the time he was 28. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Yeah. Which gave me the foundation, of course, right? It gave me the foundation for the career that I have. But it's also why I see that I have a real responsibility to share this knowledge and the experience with people who maybe didn't have that as their foundation or haven't accumulated it in their lifetime. But it does start where, and I want to also back up as well, because my mother didn't start off that way. My mother started off as a single mom on benefits with two children. And you know, your viewers can't see me, but I'm Black British, and so she was here in a time where it was no Irish, no dogs, no black, right? And so if my mother could do it at a time where racism was rife, and gave me the foundation that I did, how dare I not spread the knowledge to give everybody else the foundation? Because it is possible, but it starts by getting clear on the vision.
And this vision, money vision, how many years are we talking about, should we ideally be looking at to begin with?
I wouldn't look at any more than 3 years, because times are changing, you know, things will happen. Those kind of 10-year goals, 5-year goals, like those are died with the dinosaurs, right? COVID has taught us one thing, which is that we can't predict 10 years down the line.
No, we can't.
Right? So I would just make it a 3-year goal that you review every 6 months to see how you're on track, but your goal has to have money in it, and the reason why it has to have money in it is because everything in branding needs to be measured. I'm going to say that again. Everything in branding needs to be measured. So if you don't have a clear financial goal, what are you measuring your activities against? You know, let's say for example, you say, okay, by the end of 2021, I want to be making, I'll give a number, 2,000 as my monthly revenue. Okay, that's great. Now, all the marketing that you're doing on social media, the virtual networking that you're doing, etc., you've got to be able to measure those activities to see whether or not they are working for your sales. And if they're working for your sales, are they enabling you to hit that sales target of 2,000 a month? And each one of your marketing activities need to be measured. So that time that you're spending on Instagram, is that actually converting into sales? You know, the LinkedIn post that you put up, did you find anybody go to your website off the back of it? When they went to your website, did it convert to a warm lead, a discovery call? Every single bit of marketing needs to be measured. And the only way it can be measured is if you set financial goals as part of your vision.
There you go. So all this Instagram activity needs to actually equal money, doesn't it, in the ultimate long term? And if not, we need to revisit the plan. Okay, no, with that. You actually have a book called I Am My Brand. Mm. Now, the other problem that I find people have, and myself sometimes, is that we want a business, but when you say I am my brand, what do you mean?
What do I mean by that? Okay, so I have a saying, which is define your brand or the world define it for you.
Okay.
And the minute, what do I mean by that? The minute you step into an organization, you are a brand. The minute that you post something on the World Wide Web, you are a brand. And what is a brand? A brand is an emotional connection with your desired customer. I'm going to say it again. A brand is an emotional connection with your desired customer.
You're just dropping gems.
Thank you. And so by default, we are all brands when we're out here in the professional landscape. We are all brands the minute that we're using Google, because people can track our activities. So now the $1 million question is, are you going to define what your brand stands for? or are you going to let everybody else define what your brand stands for?
So just hold on. You're saying we're a brand, even if we haven't got our own physical, quote unquote, business launch as yet or at all, we're still a brand.
We are a brand. And the reason why is because branding is an emotional connection. So you post something on LinkedIn, you are emotionally connecting with somebody. Therefore, you're a brand.
Okay.
All a brand is, and I say all, but it's massive when you think about it, is an emotional connection with your desired customer. I'm going to take it back to give some examples. How many pairs of shoes do you have?
Oh.
Yeah, exactly, honey. Right? You don't need all those shoes, do you?
No, and the things I haven't even worn shoes for ages, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
Motherhood. Anyway, but I have quite a few.
And I'll tell you why you've got more shoes than you never need. Because branding is an emotional connection with your desired customer. People buy from their heart and their head kicks in later.
Mm-hmm.
Every marketeer, our job is to get people to do less thinking and more feeling. We want you to feel something when you walk into Sainsbury's and smell the bread, which leads you to the bakery section that makes you buy the donuts that you promised yourself you would never buy.
Because and you only came in for like two items.
And you only came in for two items. We want you to feel something when you see those pair of shoes on Instagram and then click on the buyable shop and then buy it, even though you don't need a pair of shoes because you're on lockdown. Right? We want you to feel something every single time you read an article of mine and you think, God, that Kubi, she's a bit blunt, but I kind of like her because she's strong. We want you to feel something.
Mm.
So as a result, branding is an emotional connection with your desired customer. Every time you are posting on the gram, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, every time you're showing up on Clubhouse, you're attending a virtual webinar, you're attending a virtual event, every single time you're talking to a colleague in the workplace, you're attending a virtual meeting, you are showing up and making an emotional connection. The million-dollar question is, have you given it enough thought on what you want that to be? Or are you going to allow everybody to define it for you?
Can our brand change? Can our brand, if we start off with a vision and we launch it and we're trying out something, is it okay to backtrack and change and retweak, or what? How would you suggest that process kind of works?
So the short answer is yes or no. So I'll take a minute to just break down the components of a brand. So I've just said ultimately it's an emotional connection, right? But there are different tools that we use as marketeers to make that connection. One of the tools that we use is our values, what we call brand values. Every single one of us have values in which we operate in life, but also in business. And so your brand values tend to be something that's cemented in the brand. The brand values don't tend to change. If you think about what you value, and usually if you don't know what you value, it's the thing that annoys you the most. It normally means that a value has not been met. So I'll take me as an example. I really value results. If you say you're going to do something, just do it. I don't really want to hear your excuses. I value results. I take another value. I value love.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it to you harsh, but I like to think I do it in love. I value love. I value empathy. Right. These are things that I value. Generally speaking, our values don't change. I think psychiatrists say that our values tend to be embedded in us by the time we're about 7 or 8. And then what happens is life experience helps to formalize those values, but they generally don't change.
Okay.
Now, when you're building your personal brand, if it's going to be authentically true to you, it's going to be built around your values, which is why some people say, you know, this organization, it doesn't work for me anymore. Usually it's because there's a value where it's not being met. Maybe you value work-life balance, but your boss wants you to work 23 hours of the 24, right?
Yeah.
So the value is not being met, yeah? So values don't tend to change. So that part of your personal brand, probably not. But there are other parts of the personal brand, like, for example, the personal brand packaging. What I looked like at 21 is not what I'm going to look like at 42, right? So my personal brand packaging will definitely change over time. But the way the packaging looks will normally align to what the values are. In other words, I value women being feminine. I really like being a bit of a feminine woman. Some people might say I'm a girly girl. So therefore, the way I dress, the packaging at 42 will still align with that femininity in the same way that it did at 21. It might be expressed differently, but it will align with the femininity. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. One of my brand values is that I value education. I'm quite a bit of a geek in that sense, which means that my personality, or in marketing terms, my brand archetype, is that I am the one that is that wants to be the expert in the room. So that's not going to change. At 21, I wanted to do my undergrad. I did it. At 28, I wanted to do my master's. I did it, right? The value of education isn't going to change. So therefore, the way that shows up in the world, i.e. on Instagram, I'm going to write how-to blogs on Instagram because I value teaching you how to do it because I value education. So in short, there were some things as our brands develop that will definitely evolve as we evolve as human beings. And there are some things that will be embedded because we embed as human beings, are your values embed, your personality embeds, right? You might find that somebody on here says, oh, I'm not an extrovert, I'm an introvert. And that's fine. That will be embedded. And if you use that, if you use that as part of your personal brand story, then you'll show up authentically. So that won't change over time. That will be embedded. But how you dress, how you package your brand, that will probably change over time.
Definitely. Just so interesting. So as a mother as well, I'm just trying to think. Yeah, so we can say what we are. We can, you know, we've got the kids, we've got our values. As you said, work-life balance is important to us. Can you, or should you, present your brand maybe at interview stage, you know, or would you recommend someone, if they're going for a top job, to bring out their values, you know, on the onset? People, mums returning to work, for example, might say, oh, you know, I want to keep some of this thing low-key. Not the fact that they're mums, but I want to just join in the corporation and not make too much of a fuss about, you know, my personal circumstances. Would that be something you would recommend? Or
first of all, I would really pose the question, what's important to you in life? Mm-hmm. Do you want to live a life where your values are being met, which means you can be your true authentic self and therefore be happy? Or do you want to live a life where you're constantly got imposter syndrome because you know you're not showing up? And so if the question is the latter, then by all means, join a company that doesn't match your values and just, you know, assimilate or go into the background and put your head down, but you won't be happy. The other alternative is that before you go for the interview, that you look at not just can this job pay me what I need, but what is the company culture? What does this organization value? What are their brand values? And do they align with my own personal brand values? And if they do, that is a good cultural mix. That is a good connection. That is a good match. And too often we don't ask ourselves the value-based question and then we wonder why we're unhappy.
Yes, yeah.
I was at a talk with a very high-profile accountancy firm a couple of years back. And there was a young lady, and I often get called into corporate firms, Fortune 500 firms, to talk on personal branding and leadership. And with this particular I did the talk, and then I came off stage, and we were doing some breakout rooms. And this young lady came up to me, and she said, I love my job, but I hate this company, and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, I would never tell anybody to leave their job, but I would always ask them to look at whether or not their values are being met in the organization and whether or not there's a good cultural fit. And if there isn't a good cultural fit, then start to plan out your exit strategy and just find another job where there is a good cultural fit and where your values do align. And that's when you find people who say, I like going to work because I'm doing what I'm good at. But even more than that, I'm embedded in an organization that at a values level, we see the world in the same way.
I think the timing is really good as well. Obviously, it being now lockdown, which you've had for a number of different lockdowns over the last year, companies are going to be forced to really actually listen to the values of their employees more than probably ever before. So it's obviously a great time to actually really think about what your values are. So you're coming out of this storm with a new vision and determined to really get, well, not get your way, but just, as you said, be authentic in what you're actually going to accept.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, if we go back to your original question about how do you do this? So you'll have a vision and you might say, okay, this is the vision and you've worked out what your values are. But remember, I said that you also need to put the sat-nav on. You need a strategy. So the first job that you go back to as a new mum, the first job you take might not be aligned with your values because you're thinking, God, I've got debt because of COVID and I've got these bills to pay. And that's okay. That's the first step of the strategy. But you know, by step three or job two or job four or your side hustle will be giving you what you need because you're being strategic about how you're going for it. We don't get to the destination the minute we jump in the car. We get to the destination as we drive. And that drive might take us on some twists and turns, some roundabouts. And that's all okay as long as you know what the destination is and that you've got a strategy in mind.
Brilliant.
I also know, just sticking with the drive analogy, that there'll be some people who are listening to this that feel like they're in a bit of a dead end. And I want to encourage you. When you put waves on and it takes you down a road and you miss a turning and you end up taking another turning and you end up in a dead end, what do? Do you sit in the car and cry for 10 years because you're at a dead end?
No, we calculate.
Just put it in reverse, recalculate and keep that baby.
Oh, I love it. Oh, this is so good. Okay. And most of these gems are, well, you've got your book, I Am My Brand. So that's where, I guess, most of this information is contained.
Yeah. So in I Am My Brand, it's very much for those who are ready to start developing their personal brands. And I take you through the 8 pillars of brand success. But with my new book, which I know you and I were talking about off air, my new book is much more about what do you do when you're in the storm.
Okay, so what's that book called? Let's just...
Shall we get into it, honey? Get into it. Okay. So my new book is called Crisis Made My Brand. And it comes out in March.
Great title.
Thank you. It comes out at the end of March. And the reason why I wrote the book, honey, is because...
Before you start even getting into that, the title and the timing, when did you write the book, just out of interest?
So it's so interesting. So I, many moons ago, self-published a book called What is Fabulous when I was 28. And it was self-published, didn't do much. It sold maybe 2,000 copies, if that, over like 10 years, right? So it didn't do much. But when COVID happened, beginning of 2020, I reread that book. I have one copy left on my shelf and I reread it. And as I was rereading it, I thought, God, there's so many great stories in here. And there's stories that talk about the different junctions in my career. And I thought, actually, I think I'm going to rehash this book because each one of these stories were crisis moments. And at that point, everybody around me was acting like they were losing their mind because we were about to go on the first lockdown. And I thought, God, Cuba, you've been in so many crisis moments. But actually, each one of these crisis moments have helped to build your brand. They've all been stepping stones. To where you are now. And so that's what got me starting to write Crisis Made My Brand. And it's really just taking those stories. And I'll give you one of them.
Please, yep.
Yeah, the book starts with my best friend, Louisa. And Lou got a very rare disease called Scomodona when we were in our late 20s. And they told her that she would only have 5 years to live. Mm-hmm. And she made a decision that she was going to live even though she was dying.
Wow.
And we spent the first 5 years just enjoying each other. And what ended up happening is Lou met a guy on the fourth year and they started dating and he was the most amazing man. And 9 years later, she was still alive. She was clearly dying. She went from a size 14, quite robust figure, right down to a size 6. So you could see that her body was literally eating itself alive. But she was living as she was dying. And her partner, they got married. And 6 months after her wedding, she passed away. And I start the book with Lou's story because Lou kept reminding me over my career and her journey reminds me every day. Even when you look like you're in a death-like situation, maybe your death is your finances, maybe you have lost somebody, maybe you've lost a job, any of these losses are a death, but you need to live in the time where you think you're dying. And as you live and you come from a place of, I'm going to rinse out every inch of this time that I have left,
mm-hmm.
The journey is so much more happier. My best friend Louisa, she passed away after 9.5 years. She outlived what the doctor said, but she lived as she was dying.
That is an amazing testimony. And not only that, that is so true.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no greater time to bring a light to that than in this crisis moment where we think, everything's just not what it was, and what's the message here? And as you said, just live. Find what you can and hold on to, and
absolutely
go for it.
And go for it. And it, you know, Lou used to do things like, at one point all of her fingernails dropped off, and she would still go and get false nails, and she would stick them on even though her natural entire fingernail bed dropped off. Because she was like, I'm not going to stop being me just because I'm dying. I love fashion. I love makeup. You know, I've got a picture of the two of us at her wedding, and she's so skinny. It's sad to the eye, but she looked so beautiful because she was living even though she was dying.
It's like turning, not a mess, but there's another saying, isn't it? The mess into the message. Or,
absolutely. You know. It's taking your pain and making it your purpose.
That's it.
It is taking a situation that looks like it's dying, but saying, no, I'm not going to subscribe to this. Okay, maybe right now it's difficult to pay your bills. Maybe right now you're, you know, taking from Peter to give to Paul. Maybe right now you've got Bayless at the door, but that's not going to change my disposition of being happy. That's not going to make me a grumpy mum to my children. Me and my children, we might be in a one-bedroom apartment and there's no heating, but we're going to have fun and we're going to play games even though it's lockdown and quarantine. My breast might be hurting me because I'm breastfeeding this child, but I'm not going to take it out on my husband. I'm not going to die when I'm dying. I'm going to live in this moment.
Wow, I needed that word, if anyone else did. I needed that message. That's really, really profound. Thank you for sharing that. And was there anyone in particular? I mean, obviously, this is a confident mum, but who did you have in mind when you were writing the book?
I mean, my tribe is women. I have found over the years that, you know, I love the sisterhood. Every corporate gig that I've ever got, whether it be working with TikTok or L'Oreal or Aston Martin or Rolls-Royce, I mean, literally I could list every major brand. It has been a woman who has opened the door for me to get in there. I have an online community called the Boss Squad that are 93% women. I mentor them every single week. So whenever I'm doing anything, I come from the place of, let me talk to the sisters.
Yeah.
Now, if a man happens to pick up my book, and I know men have picked up my current book, I Am My Brand, and they're reading it and they're loving it, that's great. But I write for women, because the truth is that our journey is different to men. Not better or less than, but different. And I'm a mom. I was a wife. I've unfortunately gone through a divorce. I'm now somebody's girlfriend.
Like you said, you're holding on to it and you're going for it.
Oh, yeah? Listen, I love love, man. If you've been divorced or gone through a divorce, mm-hmm. you'll know that it's a horrible thing. But so what? Let's go back to that car. So you ended up at a dead end. Now put your car in reverse and keep this baby moving.
There you go. you have to. Goodness me, that's amazing. Oh, good for you. Oh.
Thank you. And he's younger and cute too.
Don't give too much info in case I need to put an explicit rating on.
Oh yeah, it's true.
No, this is all good. Good for you. There you go. You can, and you know, that takes a lot of confidence. And I was going to ask you about mindset as well, actually. Whenever we're making this change, whether it is redating again after divorce, starting a business, even applying for a job and saying, you know what, I'm at home, forget what's happened behind. I wanted to take a few of these steps and, you know, begin to give myself the aim. If it looks good in practice, obviously it works. Where do I get the confidence from? I just think, ooh.
People ask me this question all the time. They say, Kimmy, was you born with confidence? Especially if they've just seen me come off stage or something. And look, the truth is this. Confidence is a muscle. Just like every other muscle, it needs to be worked. So what I would encourage you to do is, whatever you're not feeling confident in, that's okay. Do it anyway. Because the more you do it, the more you're stretching the muscle, and the more you're stretching the muscle of confidence, and the more results you get off the back of stretching the muscle, the more confidence you will get. And that's whether you want to get on a dating website or go on your first date after divorce, or whether you want to fill out your new application for a new job and get back into the marketplace, or whether you want to, you know, be a speaker and get on your first virtual stage or physical stage. Just do it. And you're not going to feel confident the first time you do it. You know, the first date that I went on after my you know, being divorced, actually happens to be the guy I'm bloody dating, believe it or not. But the first date that I went on, I was so nervous. I was so nervous. But so what? So what? Get back in that car, press reverse and keep driving.
Oh, God, this is so cool. You're so cool. That's amazing. Yeah. You know, like you're saying, it's all about you do it once and then you're probably nervous. Then the next time you're a little less nervous. And then third time, and then one day you just forget to be scared, I guess.
Absolutely. And you'll make mistakes. You know, you will absolutely make mistakes. But that's okay, right? Mistakes are not mistakes. They're just lessons to learn. And these are cliche things that are coming out my mouth, but they are so true. You know, I've made so many mistakes in my career. And do you see that on my showreel? No, on my showreel, you see all the highlights, like everybody else's showreel. Right? But for every highlight, I've probably made about 20 million mistakes. But all of those mistakes have enabled me to be better, enabled me to be stronger, has given me more courage. It's told me what not to do next time. And it's the same thing for you. All the mistakes that you are going to make in whatever new venture you're doing is just going to give you more armor to be better. And this is the best part of life. The mistakes is the lessons that you pass on. And as women, we're nurturers. We are life givers, not just physically to our own babies, but to all the babies and the people we come in contact with. That's what we're designed to do. So every mistake that you make is a lesson you're going to pass on to somebody else. And so when you make the mistakes, rather than going, oh, I'm such an idiot, maybe say, thank you, God. This is a lesson I can pass on to somebody else.
Do you know what? This is actually moving into my next question about confidence boosting tips and things that women can do. You know, rather than, okay, so I've got an interview on Monday. I know that I'm going to go anyway. I'm not going to not go, but I don't feel confident necessarily going. I'm still going to go, but what can I do? And just in general, in any area of life, I saw you live actually, and I know that you did some working out, and you know, that gives you endorphins and makes you feel good.
Yeah.
I love doing that as well. So just in terms of organizing yourself, or what tips would you say? This is something that I've done that really worked for me and I would definitely recommend.
I think it's imperative to look at what successful people do to be successful, if that's your aim goal, right? And it doesn't matter what you want to be successful in. There are formulas. There are, I often say success leaves a footprint. There are footprints that you can follow. One of those is definitely mastering your morning. And again, you've probably heard people say this a million times, and I'm going to be one of those horrible people.
Say it a million and one time.
Yeah. And say it a million and one time because it's true, right? And that's really difficult when you've got children.
Mm.
The other day, somebody said to me, QB, how are you juggling being a mum at home with your child? And I used to have a nanny, yeah, and I don't have the nanny anymore, and I'm running it all and what have you. And I said to them, organisation. You have to get super organized during this time. If you do not have a timetable for your family, you need to implement one. How are you possibly going to be an effective mother and be an effective businesswoman without a timetable? My daughter, who's 8 years old, she's super clear when it's time for mummy and daughter time, but she's also super clear when mummy's working. Right. And in the time that I'm working, I set her tasks to do or give her some free time to just play with her iPad, go on Roblox, watch telly, etc. But there's a timetable.
She's really a mini you. I've seen her energy. Yeah.
But there's a timetable. Otherwise, how do you function? And the other thing that the timetable does is it limits the mummy guilt as well.
Yeah.
Because she knows there's a time where we can do half an hour of playing whatever she wants me to play. You want me to play Roblox for the millionth time? I hate that game, but okay. Or you want me to wash your baby's doll's hair again? Okay, let's do doll now, right? But because she knows that she's got that undivided mummy time, when I'm on, for example, my IG Live and I give her the side eye to say, don't come in the camera now, right? She doesn't mind because she knows, okay, in 2 hours, I'm going to have undivided mummy time. So you've got to have a timetable. The other thing that I would say, just practical tips, is get to bed. Oh, you know, get to bed. All of this nonsense of I'm going to work until 3 a.m, that will just lead to exhaustion and collapse. Right? So get to bed. Maybe give yourself, you know, if you like to work late, give yourself 1 or 2 nights a week that you work late. But that's it. The rest of the time, try and get to bed by 10, 11 o'clock because your children are going to be up early.
Yeah.
So you don't want to wake up foggy, right? You don't want to wake up foggy. So wake up early, when your children wake up early, with a timetable that they follow and you follow, so that you're the best mum you can be, but also the best businesswoman that you can be.
I concur. Definitely. Early morning, they're going to wake up anyway, obviously, at the same time, no matter what time you put them to bed, they're still up. My daughter's up at 5.
Absolutely.
But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and one of the things I did with Angel from the get-go is I put her to bed at 7 p.m. sharp. Every night, whether it's weekday or weekend, your bedtime is 7 p.m. The reason being, I really want to encourage the mums, we need our time as women.
We do.
We need our time, right, babe?
I always say I'm reclaiming my time, yeah.
Absolutely.
We need to, yeah, 100%.
So put those babies to bed and do not feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
You know, I say to Angel, you will get bedtime. Not every night will you get a bedtime story, because unfortunately I might be on a work call, but I'll try and do it 2 or 3 times out of the week. Again, it goes into the timetable. So she can't go, mommy, but I really want a story. And I say, hey, let's look at the timetable. Story night's on Wednesday. Right, and then I tell my PA, don't you dare put in a meeting at that time, because that's Angel's story night.
Looking your time, protecting your time.
Protecting your time, yeah.
Finding time, yeah. No, I love all of that.
And then when she gets up at 7:30 and looks at me, I say, it's mummy's time now. I don't want to see you.
Be done. And I guess, and the earlier you implement it, I've got, you know, even my mum, because we were allowed to stay up late. She didn't really know how to do this routine thing when we were growing up. So I was an early sleeper. I've always been an early sleeper. So it is painful for me to go to bed late. Everyone, my friends know me, early bird. So my kids are in bed at 7. Bye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 7. And the more you put them down at that time, it does eventually work. And they do begin to feel sleepy, and it does fit into a routine. I haven't mastered all the areas, but routine and bed is... So what more do you want people to know about your book? Either your I Am My Brand or your new book that's coming out?
The books are very different, even though they both got branding in the title. I think it depends on where you are. If you are maybe thinking, right, I want to get back out there, then I would recommend you buy I Am My Brand, because it gives you the 8 pillars of brand success. How can you build your personal brand? Whether that's going for a job or building your own business, it applies for both. But if you are feeling like you're in a rut and you need an emotional pick-me-up and you need, you know, a bit of oomph and a bit of gumption, then Crisis Made My Brand is definitely the book for you right now. And that's only available in audiobook at the end of March.
And that's great for mums, because, you know, if you're like me, wireless headphones are on, we're cooking, we're doing this, we're listening. So perfect. Absolutely perfect. Before my final question, like, in terms of the biggest challenge of being both a mum and a businesswoman, is there anything that you get to feel guilty about, or do you think you've kind of mastered this area? I know you've got your mummy time that you've segmented, so...
I haven't mastered this. Okay, I don't think we ever do, right? Like, if we're really honest with ourselves, it's a constant juggle. As our children grow and evolve, they just present new challenges. The minute you think you've mastered something, they change into a new being, right? And you're like, oh my God, who is this person in front of me now that now wants to ask me more questions and talk back? And now she's telling me what I told her 5 weeks ago. Like, oh, Jesus.
And sounding like you while she's saying it.
And right, exactly. So I don't think we ever master it. I think the biggest challenge has definitely been trying to rejig during this COVID time. And I think that's another reason why Crisis Made My Brand, I felt like I had to get it out, because it's really, like so many people, I had to go into my emotions. I had to check my emotions. Mm-hmm. I had to put things in place so that I didn't get into a negative headspace. In my book, I Am My Brand, for example, I talk about the difference between the wolf and the dog. And so for me, I think the challenge has been to stay positive, to stay motivated, and to support my community. I mentioned earlier my Boss Squad community of amazing women that I mentor, to keep them positive as women, as mothers, as business women. I think that's been the challenge, to be your sister's keeper.
And just, you talked about your own mum, just to conclude on this point, being a single mum, but forging a way into entrepreneurship and showing us that it's possible. Was there anything you hold on to? Was there something she did, or it's just, was it her attitude, or just what was it about her, and how is that influencing you as a parent?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think as a mother, one of the biggest things that she gave us beyond love was to make us be thinkers. My mum is she never used to smack us. The punishment was to go away and write down why you did it and what you would do differently. And it was horrible. Yeah, but it was horrible.
No,
as a child.
Right. Yes.
No, right? It was like, But she did it from as early as I can remember. You know, before we could really spell, we could have to draw it. How was we feeling? Why would we do it? And what would we do differently? Oh my God, it was horrible as a child. But what it got us to do is it got us to be thinkers. It got us to be analytical. And I think there's no greater gift, right? There's no greater gift that you can give a child beyond love, love being the greatest, but beyond love, but getting them to think for themselves. Because then when they go into the world and the world is throwing all sorts of rubbish at them, they have the ability to analyze. Is that person for me or against me? Is this job the one I want to go to? The ability to analyze was the greatest gift that she gave all three of us as her kids beyond love. I think watching her as a woman, I think what she has shown me is the possibilities. And that no matter what it looks like, again, you know, my mom was a black woman going on the BBC at a time when, you know, we weren't on the BBC, right? It wasn't cool to be black in the 70s in England. And she became a CEO in the 80s.
Wow.
And I think, you know, she retired before the age of 50 to Spain with a property portfolio with my dad, who I call my, you know, my stepdad, but I call him dad. And even in the area of love, the reason why I was able to say, no, I will find love again is because my mum did.
There you go.
Right? She married my stepdad and she was just as a woman an example of the possibilities. And there's a saying that I'd love to leave your listeners with, which is, the woman who thinks she can and the woman who thinks she can't, they are both right. In other words, if you think you can't find love, you're right, you won't. If you think you can find love, you're right, you will. The power is all in your mind. It's all in your hands. You are the CEO of your career. You are the CEO of your personal brand. You are the CEO of your business. You are the CEO of your life. So a woman who thinks she can and a woman who thinks she can't, they are both right.
We're just going to leave it. We're going to have to stop there because drop mic. I haven't got one. No, amazing. Yeah, we'll end it there because I think you have just left us with some gems that we really need to get our teeth into. If anyone wants to, or they should want to get your book, your books, you can get I Am My Brand. And that's on Amazon. It's everywhere, isn't it, that book?
It is everywhere. Everywhere.
And your new book is coming out on...
It's coming out on Amazon. But what I'd recommend everybody do is go to shebuildsbrands.com.
Right, and, directly from...
Yeah, and just simply because, depending on where your listeners are in the world, there's a whole list of different retailers around the world that are stocking I Am My Brand. And Crisis Made My Brand will also be available on shebuildsbrands.com.
Phenomenal. Thank you. And where can people find you?
The best social media platform for me, I mean, I'm across all of them, but the one I have lots of fun with is Instagram, and that's at She Builds Brands. But you can find me on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Clubhouse, etc. But if you want to have fun with me, I do IG Lives every Monday and Friday.
You know, you're working out, you're doing all the things, and it is fun. It's a great place to hang out. So thank you, mums, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And I will see you on the next one. And thank you so much, Kibi, for making the time to visit us today.
Thank you.
Thank you again for tuning in. If this episode helped you in any way, please share so more mums can find the podcast and benefit from the information on today's show. Please also subscribe and review the podcast. It will be greatly appreciated and really keep me encouraged. Till the next episode, remember that you are the best mum for your children, and I know you're doing an amazing job. So be kind and patient with yourselves. See you soon.